Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It is hot out there. That's because Boston is the middle of its first heat wave of the summer. Now, usually there are a lot of ways you can escape the heat, maybe turn on the AC, go to the mall or a community center or a pool. But for those who don't have air conditioning in their homes or can't afford to run it right now, this year is really hard because COVID-19 restrictions, physical distancing guidelines have limited where you can go to cool off. So what do we do? What do people do? And what are the social and health effects of trying to survive the heat while also trying to survive a pandemic? We're going to talk about that now. And here to help us have this discussion is Rebecca Davis, the Deputy Director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Rebecca, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Rhianne Gibson, Senior Research Fellow at the Conservation Law Foundation, who manages their Healthy Neighborhoods Initiative. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me this afternoon.
So heat happens every year, Rebecca and Rhianne, but this year is different because of COVID-19. What unique issues is it bringing up this year? Rebecca.
Sure. Well, there are a couple of things that you mentioned in the opener. One is that a lot of our traditional cooling outlets for folks that don't have air conditioning at home, whether that be, you know, actual cooling centers, youth facilities, libraries, senior centers, or even just going to hang out at the mall, don't feel as safe with the pandemic and concerns, particularly for the most vulnerable. And at the same time, you know, we're seeing a lot of folks, they've lost their jobs, they have less income coming in. So even if they might have an air conditioning unit running at home, they're concerned about turning it on. They don't have the funding or the money available to pay their utility bills. And this is really highlighting what is an exacerbating situation, particularly as we look at climate change and increasing heat waves now and in the future.
So Rhianne, in the short term, what do we do?
In the short term, definitely we need plans that are community centered and very specific to the experience of the community in this time, unique time with COVID-19. Some communities are being hit really hard with COVID-19. So they've got family members who are in isolation. They're managing kids and on childcare and all of that. And some communities aren't being hit quite as hard. So the complications are different for each community. We definitely need more cooling centers that take into account some of these considerations where people may be exposed to COVID-19, but they also need a safe place to cool off. We need to be listening to more community voices and following the lead of the trusted community partners in each place to figure out what the unique concerns are for everyone and how to accommodate them.
I want to talk for a minute, both of you, about the elderly. Traditionally, they are the most vulnerable to heat. Our older adults are. They're also the most vulnerable to COVID. What are the unique risks facing older adults this summer at the intersection of this heat and COVID? And what are some of the options or resources specifically available for them?
Yeah, I think the
Rebecca
put
made,
it out there
that yeah, go ahead.
Elderly, particularly a unique situation. And also we know that those that are most vulnerable to heat are those that are managing underlying medical conditions. And those are often the elderly and similar with COVID. And so a lot of what we're seeing our cities and towns do is one, really try to partner with community-based organizations and even some of the mutual aid networks that have been set up to deal with the pandemic, to see whether we can also use that to deal with heat. So wellness checks are really important. I mean, one of the biggest things any of us can do as individuals is check in on our elderly neighbors and make sure that they're doing okay and surviving and have, you know, the tools that they can to figure out how to stay cool at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Rebecca,
definitely.
Let's talk up. Sorry, go ahead.
I would also add to that just the being mindful, of course, of the added risk for the elderly and the social network connections that are so important for those folks who aren't connected to smartphones or, can't pull up their community and find their laptop and find the nearest cooling center in their community. So things like going door to door with flyers, door knocking, calling people up on their landlines to figure out, what's going on and how the community can best serve them.
So let me ask both of you, because I've read some work by both of you. We're having a conversation that is real time, right? It's about the intersection of something that's happening right now, which is this heat wave, and something else that's happening right now, which is this pandemic. And yet we know that the type of heat, the structural dimensions of the environmental justice dimensions of the kind of heat that our most vulnerable neighborhoods in Boston are experiencing are the result of long-term budget decisions, disinvestment, lack of green space. Can we talk about kind of how we got here?
Yeah, I would just echo what you said about the historical decisions we've made nationally in terms of who lives where, and centering communities of color, concentrating communities of color through redlining practices, through our national policies in communities where there's also a highway running through, where there are power plants and other industrial buildings that are sending exhaust into the air, and where there are bus depots, or there are more likely to be buses running through the community as opposed to a transit line or something like that, that's not blowing out chemicals that are as detrimental.
Yeah, Rhianne is really right. It's these historical patterns of land use and historical patterns of investment, but it's even decisions we're making today. I mean, a lot of these communities have, you know, older housing stock that hasn't been invested in. And at the same time, you know, we're not producing the level of affordable housing or accessible housing that we really need to meet our community's needs. And so it's a history and of federal, state, and local policy. And it's also, you know, some of the land use decisions that we continue to make.
I want to play a little bit of sound here from a Chelsea resident that we spoke with earlier about what it's like to experience this heat. So the resident's name is Noemi Lobato Rosas, and she's speaking through a translator, Maria Belen Powers, from Green Roots, which is an environmental protection organization in Chelsea. Here's Noemi.
Este mes nos hubiera experiencing a lot of heat. I have a 4-year-old son. He sweats a lot, so we try to keep cool by taking a lot of showers and baths with cold water so that we don't have to turn on the AC at night. This past month, the bill went up by a lot. And, you know, with the hours that have been cut in our jobs, we're just trying to save energy. And we're trying to stay inside in order to stay safe from the virus. But yeah, our bills are going up by a lot.
I suspect that there are many for whom it didn't even occur to them that in this level of heat, if you have air conditioning, you might still not be able to run it because of the cost of the utility. I know when I was running Catholic Charities during the Great Recession, and one of the hardest things for us to do was get money to help people offset their utility bills. And yet those really are a matter of life and death. So what can we begin to do around city policy to address these immediate rate limiting factors to even cooling off or being safer in the home?
You know, in the short term, I think, you know, we're really happy to see that there continues to be utility moratorium for shutoffs through the summer. And so, you know, anyone that's having trouble accessing their utility bills, you know, they should reach out and look to see whether they're eligible for assistance for discounts or payment plans. But I think we do need to do more on this front. There's a program called the LIHEAP program, and that's federal dollars that we use to help folks pay their bills in the winter when they have high heating costs. And one of the solutions we're looking for is trying to increase that funding and also have it be eligible for income eligible folks to utilize in the summer so that if they do have access to an air conditioning, they can use it and stay comfortable.
Rhianne, I know you've been thinking about this intersectionality, right, between Black and Brown communities, low-income urban neighborhoods, particular vulnerability to heat. We've addressed some of the systemic issues there already, but as we begin to think very specifically in the coming months, how we support our communities that have been hardest hit by the pandemic and now by these exogenous factors that are also making them vulnerable, what kind of policy priorities do we need to have? I heard you on listening to residents, on being driven by local needs, but based on your research, what kind of policy priorities do we need to be thinking about?
I think we definitely need to be developing more more plans, more resiliency plans, recognizing that these are two major crises that we're having that are overlapping, but climate change is ongoing. We're only going to see more climate crises moving forward. So developing resiliency plans like I said earlier, looking to communities, I think through our transit, thinking through our transit and transit justice, making sure that clean energy is running those trains and buses, that we're not continuing to perpetuate some of these same harms that we've already been causing.
And Rebecca, in our last minute or so, what about climate change and thinking about long-term climate change strategies and climate change policy in all of this?
Yeah, I'm hoping this is a moment that we can call on our state and federal lawmakers to really think about a sustainable, equitable, and climate-forward recovery. I mean, we actually have a real opportunity to take dollars and invest them in the most vulnerable communities to help have a better housing stock so they can withstand the heat or even the cold, and to create some of these investments, whether it be transit, access to public space, planting of trees. We know all of these help make our lives better and the lives of communities better, and they also help to mitigate and make us more resilient to climate change.
And that's Rebecca Davis, the Deputy Director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Rhianne Gibson, Senior Research Fellow at the Conservation Law Foundation, who manages the Healthy Neighborhoods Study there. Rhianne, thank you.
Thank you so much.